Welcome to the deep dive. We cut through the noise, getting right to the core of, well, fascinating topics. And today we're diving into a brand you've definitely heard of, often called the King of Jewelers and Jeweler of Kings. We're talking Cartier, of course. Ever wonder about the stories, you know, the real history behind those watches, the ones everyone seems to recognize? Well, that's our mission today. We're going deep into seven of Cartier's most iconic watch collections, looking at their history, their designs, why they still matter. We've got this great article detailing them, and we're going to unpack it, pull out the surprising bits, the key insights. These things are way more than just time tellers.
Exactly. Think of it like a journey, not just about watches, but design, innovation, even how big world events play a part. We'll look at how art, innovation, even war shape some of the most famous, most valuable watches out there. So by the end, you won't just know what they are, but really why they're important, how they actually came about. It's about the legacy behind the luxury, you know?
Right. So Cartier starts way back, 1847, Louis-François Cartier. But things really kicked off when his sons took over in 1899. They thought a need for something new. Cartier Sr., he'd made these fancy wristwatches for women, very ornate, but men? They were still all about pocket watches. There was this gap, a need for something practical, but still, you know, masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us straight to the pioneers, right? The Santos and the Tano. The Santos is the big one. Louis Cartier, one of the sons, he designs what many call the first man's wristwatch. This was 1904. And the story here is just fantastic. It wasn't just like a design exercise.
No, it was functional.
Exactly. For his friend, the famous pilot, Alberto Santos Dumont.
Yes.
Imagine flying those early planes, these daredevil flights, trying to pull out a pocket watch. Forget it. It was clumsy, maybe even dangerous.
Wasting precious seconds.
Totally. So a reliable watch right there on the wrist helped him shave off flight time. It wasn't just nice to have. It was almost a necessity for that kind of cutting-edge aviation.
That makes sense.
And the impact was huge. Santos Dumont achieved incredible things. He designed his first aircraft, even a helicopter, around 1905. Then, October 23rd, 1906, he makes this flight 60 meters long, 5 meters high. The first certified witnessed flight of a heavier-than-air machine.
That certification is key, isn't it?
It really is. Our source mentions the Wright brothers claimed an earlier flight, but apparently no independent verification for their statement at that time.
So that verified flight for Santos Dumont really cements the watch's place in history.
Absolutely. It links the Santos directly to this undeniable milestone. It's not just a first. It's proven by history. Great story for Cartier.
Definitely. A powerful narrative.
So the design goes into production, general sale from 1911, and today they're hugely valuable.
Oh, yeah. That source mentioned a Santos Mysterious 100 sold for, what, $40,000 back in 2019?
Right. And the Santos de Cartier skeleton models, you know, the ones where you see the mechanics inside.
Mm-hmm. The openwork dials.
Those can go from, like, $25,000 up to $55,000 retail, depending on the metal.
So, while the Santos was breaking ground with practicality, Cartier also launched the Tano in 1906. That's the same year they basically invented the wristwatch for men, as the source puts it.
Okay, the Tano. What's its story? Different vibe.
Totally different. Always prestigious, always made in precious metals. Gold, platinum, that sort of thing. It had this really distinctive barrel shape you'd recognize.
What barrel shape? Interesting.
But here's the thing. It didn't catch on immediately with everyone.
Mm.
Our source says the strap was thinner, and it was often scorned by the most masculine.
Scorned? Really?
Yeah. So it became more of a collector's piece.
Yeah.
Prized by connoisseurs who appreciated that unique, elegant shape. Maybe a bit ahead of its time for the mainstream male taste back then.
So more of an insider's choice, you could say. Has that changed?
So, yes and no. It's always been respected by those in the know. But good design lasts, right? It got a big revival in 2019, part of the Privé collection. Updated with modern skeleton dials, bigger cases, appealing more broadly now.
Ah, so bringing it to a new audience.
Exactly. It shows how some designs start niche, maybe even a bit controversial, get valued by collectors, and then, boom, reemerge for a wider audience later. That's enduring design.
And the older ones are still collectible.
Oh, definitely. The article mentions 70s Tano model selling at auction in Europe for, like, 5,000 pounds and up. Shows it holds its value.
Wow. It's just incredible how Cartier tackled both pure need-the-pilot's watch and refined taste, the connoisseur's Tano, right at the start of men's wristwatches. Really set the stage.
Absolutely. Two different paths, both iconic.
Okay, so from those beginnings, Cartier takes this really unexpected turn for inspiration. We're talking about the Tank watch.
Ah, the Tank. unmistakable.
Launched in 1917, and the inspiration is a kind of wild, actual tanks from the Western Front in World War I, Renault tanks specifically.
It seems so counterintuitive, doesn't it? A brutal war machine inspiring something so elegant.
It really does, and the very first one made, given to U.S. General Pershing in 1917. So right away, it's tied to these huge historical events.
A direct link.
And the design itself is so distinct. That square face set inside the rectangular case, those thin sword-like hands, you see those on lots of Cartier.
Mm-hmm. A signature element.
And the blue sapphire cabochon on the crown, that little dome of polished gemstone,
yep.
Instantly recognizable.
Right. The early ones even had straps that looked like they flowed right into the case sides.
Yeah.
Very integrated.
It's just amazing to think that such elegance came from that inspiration.
It really is. And maybe that's the genius of it. That powerful irony, taking a symbol of conflict, of force, and transforming it, abstracting it into something so refined and ultimately luxurious.
That's a great way to put it. Distilling the idea of strength, maybe, but making it beautiful.
Exactly. The design elevates it, lets the brutal origins fade, but keeps that powerful aesthetic. It's a real testament to the power of design, I think.
And they were super rare at first, weren't they?
Extremely. The source says only 6 were made in 1918. Just 6.
Wow. But the design obviously had legs. It kept evolving.
Oh, absolutely. You get the Tank Louis in 1922, the Tank Americain later in 89, the Tank Francais in 96.
So same core idea, but adapting over time.
Precisely. Each keeps that spirit befits its own era. Enduring is the word.
So moving into more modern times, Cartier didn't stop innovating. Let's talk about the Bellon Bleu and the Clé de Cartier. These feel a bit different.
They do, yeah. More rounded, perhaps.
Let's start with Bellon Bleu. That launched, what, 2006? So fairly recent in the grand scheme of things. Known for its rounded look and sexy curves. The article even says it floats through the world of Cartier watchmaking. Quite poetic.
Huh, yeah. It does have that smooth, pebble-like feel almost.
And the signature thing is that sapphire cabochon, the blue ball, but it's sort of suspended, integrated right into the case by the crown guard.
Right. It's not just stuck on the crown. It's part of the case's flow.
But the source notes something interesting. Not all of them are genuine sapphires.
Ah, right. Which allows them to keep that design signature across different price points. Makes sense for wider appeal.
But if you want the real deal, the top end.
Wow. The article mentions a white gold one covered in diamonds.
With a genuine sapphire cabochon, yeah.
Valued around 180,000 pounds. It's got like 640 diamonds. That's over 12 carats.
Serious bling. Made from 18K white gold with a rhodium finish for extra brightness. That's high luxury, no question.
Definitely. Now, what about the Clé de Cartier? That came later, 2015.
Yeah, building on that rounded success of the Bellon Bleu, but with a twist.
The key twist, right. Clé means key in French.
Exactly. The winder crown is shaped like an old-fashioned winding key. Square, kind of ingot-shaped. It's a really unique look against the round case.
And it still has the sapphire cabochon.
Oh, absolutely. That's non-negotiable Cartier, pretty much. But the key shape is the main event here.
Is there anything special about how that key works, mechanically? Or is it just the look?
No, there's a clever bit of mechanics there, too. Our source explains it. Apparently, the winder automatically aligns itself, like, vertically or horizontally, depending on how you hold it.
Oh, yeah, and you can wind it manually, or, and this is cool, it can spin freely, kind of like the keys on old clocks or pocket watches. A nice little nod to the past.
That's a really interesting detail. So it's playful, almost.
It is. And it shows how they can introduce these unique features. Initially, the clay was only in precious metals, you know, gold.
Right, keeping it exclusive at first.
But now, you can get it in stainless steel, too. So they opened it up, made it more accessible, while keeping that unique design.
That makes sense, broadening the appeal.
And the source mentions another detail, the secret signature.
Ah, yes. Inside the Roman numerals.
Exactly. Usually a tiny Cartier hidden in the V or the X of the Zix or X numeral helps spot fakes. On the clay, the numerals are often quite bold, blue, matching the sapphire. And it uses Cartier's newer 1847 MC movement.
And the price range reflects that accessibility now.
Big range. Starts around, say, 4,000 pounds for steel, but goes way up. Top-end gold ones with diamonds, you're looking at 140,000 pounds.
It's just fascinating how they blend aesthetics and mechanics in these newer lines. The floating ball, the clever key. It's art and engineering.
Definitely. Pieces designed to be talked about, not just worn.
Okay, let's shift gears to what you might call the really high-end, the connoisseur's choices. The Rotonde and the Tortue.
Right, this is where Cartier often showcases its most complex watchmaking. The Rotonde de Cartier collection is really diverse in style, But the focus is always on premium craftsmanship.
Still got the signature cabochon, I assume?
Usually, yes. But they're also known for really interesting chronograph displays, moon phases, very complex movements.
And this is where we see some seriously high prices,
Oh,
right?
yeah. This is peak horology. The source highlights the flying tourbillon model.
The tourbillon, that's the mechanism that counters gravity for better accuracy. Super complex.
Exactly. And the Raton Flying Tourbillon retails for over 1.3 million
No, no,
kroner.
no. 1.3 million. That's staggering.
It is. It's about showcasing the absolute peak of mechanical artistry and, well, exclusivity. It's not just telling time anymore.
So what drives that value? Is it just the mechanics?
It's a combination. The incredible complexity, the hours of hand finishing by master watchmakers, the rarity, often very limited editions, the precious materials, and the sheer artistic statement. It's wearable mechanical sculpture, really.
Mechanical sculpture, I like that. And the range for Rotonde is pretty wide then.
Huge range. You can find some starting around 7,000 pounds, but it climbs rapidly. Think models like the Mysterious Double Movement, the Astro Tourbillon, Earth and Moon, all very special pieces.
Okay, and then there's the Tortue. This one goes way back, doesn't
It
it?
does, back to 1912, almost right after the Santos. And the key thing about the Tortue, its name means tortoise, referencing its shape,
Oh, okay.
is that it has only ever been made in precious metals, according to our source anyway, gold or platinum, always.
So from day one, it was positioned as pure luxury.
Absolutely, a statement of enduring high-end status.
The source mentions a specific model, the Tortue XL from 2006, as being particularly rare. Why that one?
Rarity.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Only 100 were made. Even though it's not technically vintage, that limited production makes it highly sought after.
And the craftsmanship.
Top tier. That XL model was pink gold and platinum, using a 9601MC caliber movement, which was actually supplied by Jaeger-LeCoultre.
Ah, another prestigious watchmaker involved. That adds another layer of
It
interest.
does. Shows collaboration at the highest level. And of course, prices vary massively depending on the specifics. A simple leather strap version versus one on a diamond set bracelet, for example.
So these two collections, Raton and Tortue, they really represent Cartier's watchmaking summit.
Precisely. Blending that traditional luxury heritage, precious materials with really cutting-edge, complicated watchmaking, it shows why some objects become so valuable. It's the craft, the rarity, the story.
It really underscores how value can be about so much more than just function. Exclusivity, artistry, heritage, it all plays a part. Okay, so what a journey. We've gone from the very first men's wristwatches, born out of a pilot's need with the Santos and the connoisseur's choice, the Tano. Then that surprising leap with the Tank, inspired by, well, tanks.
Quite the origin story.
Then into the modern era, the curves of the Bellon Bleu, the clever mechanics of the Clé de Cartier. And finally, touching those peaks of watchmaking art with the Rotonde and the enduring luxury of the Tortue, it's quite a legacy Cartier has built.
It truly is. And that's really the main point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Each watch tells a story, its history, its art, its innovation, all wrapped up in this one object on your wrist. It's definitely not just about telling the time. It's about marking time, historical moments, personal achievements. So maybe something to think about after this deep dive. Consider the objects you cherish. Maybe everyday things. What hidden stories, what unexpected inspirations might be behind them? What elevates them beyond just their function? Maybe that old watch from your grandfather, or even a favorite chair. There might be a whole narrative there just waiting to be seen that makes it extraordinary for you.